This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, U.S. Justice Action Network Executive Director Holly Harris tells us why she thinks 2016 will be a good year for criminal justice reform in Michigan. But first, the last week of 2015 saw the resignation of Michigan Department of Environmental Quality Director Dan Wyant over elevated levels of lead in Flint's drinking water. The first week of 2016 has already seen Governor Rick Snyder declare a state of emergency in Genesee County because of Flint's water crisis. We're going to discuss that and other state issues which are on the radar, at least at the start of the year, with Michigan Public Radio Network's Capital Bureau Chief Rick Pluta. He joins us from Lansing. Rick, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Gordon.
What is next for Flint now that there is the state of emergency declared by Governor Snyder?
Well, basically, this was something of a technical move that may, depending on how things align, clear the way for Flint to apply for some federal assistance. And that's probably the most significant ramification of this emergency declaration. You know, the state acknowledged 3 months ago that Flint has a lead contamination problem in the drinking water as a result of some decisions made while the city was under the control of state-appointed emergency managers. You know, the state is accepting at least some measure of responsibility for that and trying to make things happen. But the question is whether or not Flint would actually qualify for federal funding. That is, that all the local and state resources that could be brought to bear are exhausted at that point, and that it would be a net gain for the city, that somehow getting the sort of federal assistance that maybe they'd like to see wouldn't result in the city losing some other things that would be more costly for them in the short or the long run.
Is there likely to be legislation or perhaps some sort of change in state policy to address the next Flint or the next place where we could see elevated levels, or at least prevent that or make it less likely from happening again?
I have to identify this up front as speculation on my part, but I would be very surprised if the governor did not make some mention of Flint, of infrastructure, specifically of water infrastructure and water infrastructure in our cities when he delivers his State of the State address in a couple of weeks. That, you know, last year he delivered an environmental message where, you know, he mentioned a lot of things having to do with water and protecting our water. And basically that got pushed back because we had the controversy over road funding, over the Detroit Public Schools bailout. And so I would strongly suspect that will move closer to the front burner in 2016.
Does it seem likely, based on what has happened so far, that Flint and the water quality there is going to cast a shadow over the legislature and perhaps over the Snyder administration for at least the foreseeable future?
Look, it's undeniable that the Flint water crisis is a scandal that is now going to be part of the history of the Snyder administration and will be, you know, part of the context in which it's judged. That you know, certainly the governor would prefer that the focus be on things like, you know, paying down the state's big debt, the things done to help redirect the future of the city of Detroit. And, you know, the fact is this is just huge, that, you know, people with long memories will remember Governor Milliken and the PBB scandal. And this is kind of on par with that.
Governor Snyder signed legislation this week that eliminates the option for voting just straight ticket, checking off one box on a ballot and voting mm-hmm. either for all the Republican candidates or all the Democratic candidates. Democrats were completely opposed to this bill. Republicans got it through during the end of the legislative session. Is this likely to add to whatever existing partisan tensions there are in Lansing?
It's becoming harder and harder to add to those partisan tensions, especially when it comes to, you know, these sort of election related matters. Part of the impetus for eliminating straight ticket voting was, you know, part of what made it time sensitive wasn't just that elections are coming up, but a lot of Republicans are starting to suspect that the possibility of having Donald Trump at the top of the Republican ticket this year is a real possibility. and they are concerned that there might be, down ballot ramifications for that. Well, there would certainly be down ballot ramifications for that. But one of the things that you can do to try and make that less of an issue in races that are lower on the ballot is make it harder for people to go in and say, you know what, I'm just going to vote for, you know, all one party or all the other. And, you know, that's what happened here. And we should point out that you know, it's the way that most other states do it, that you can still go down and fill in every race. But only about, you know, 9 other states still have this option of doing it, you know, doing a straight partisan ballot with just one mark.
But the last time that there was an attempt to change this in the state, there was a citizen-initiated referendum, which then nullified that law. This
correction,
time,
the last 2 times
this
happened.
Yeah.
There were referendums to stop it. And
that won't happen this time.
The Republicans are going to make sure that was not going to happen this time, that like a lot of controversial legislation since Governor Snyder took office, you know, talking about, you know, the elimination of item pricing, certainly the right to work law, some other things, that the legislature put an appropriation in it, in this case, $5 million ostensibly for new voting equipment. And what that does under the state constitution and a 2001 ruling from the state Supreme Court is that it makes it an appropriations bill, a spending bill, which is immune from a referendum challenge in order to protect the full faith and credit of the state of Michigan, that we could see Democrats filing some kind of a voting rights lawsuit. That would be a federal lawsuit about this. We could see maybe them trying to get around this with an initiated law, which would not be stopped by the by the referendum proofing appropriation. So those are certainly a couple of possibilities.
One of the criticisms as well is that this is, if we take out the option of voting straight ticket, we're going to create longer lines at the ballots because people are going to be in there longer having to check off boxes for every race down the ticket. Governor Snyder has said that he would favor no reason absentee voting and wanted that kind of rolled in with this elimination of the straight party option. Is that likely to get anywhere in the legislature?
Look, there is no evidence that the thinking among the state Senate leadership and probably a critical mass of the Republican caucus in the state Senate that they're interested in taking up no reason absentee voting. Despite the pleas from Governor Snyder, from Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, also a Republican, and the chair of the House Elections Committee, Lisa Lyons, that, there's no reason not to do it now. And so while anything is possible, you know, absent, some sort of leverage, there's no reason to expect that the Senate would change its direction on that.
We've heard some rumblings that there are Republicans in the legislature who would like to revisit the issue of road funding, which is one of the boxes that others such as Governor Snyder said, hey, we checked that off in 2015.
Yeah.
Is this likely to come back up? And could there be some sort of a reworking of what has passed the legislature and been signed into law?
Well, you never know. That certainly you could see, you know, a critical mass developing. It's certainly not there yet to go and take on road funding again. That this was a hodgepodge package that was put together basically to, you know, call the issue done. And so the governor and the legislature could move on to other things, including, you know, the Detroit Public Schools bailout and, maybe even water infrastructure.
There was a story that you filed, or maybe Jake Neer filed from the Michigan Public Radio Network last week, saying that 2016 could be the year of marijuana in Michigan
that
politics.
That was Jake.
That was Jake.
He's our marijuana expert.
There you
here.
Go. All right, pot correspondent.
We don't ask him why.
Exactly. But I guess I'm wondering at this point. There's 3 different groups that have taken out petitions and are collecting them in theory to put something before voters. How likely is it that voters in the state of Michigan are going to have some say on the possibility of legalizing marijuana this year?
Well, the 3rd petition that you just mentioned was just approved, and the hour is getting late if you expect that, you know, that your campaign will require the 6-month window to get the signatures that it needs. But all of these campaigns so far have struggled to get to get the necessary number of names, to the point where now they're even asking a state elections board called the Board of State Canvassers to change the rules so that instead of this being a 6-month window to gather signatures, that you could have longer than that, as long as you could still prove that everybody on your petitions, every valid signature on your petitions remains valid because that person is still a registered voter. It's a very, very technical argument, and we'll see what happens. But they wouldn't be there asking for this if they didn't need more time to get it done.
2 years ago, 2014, there were just a couple of wolf hunting proposals on the ballot. 2012, right. There were 5 different proposals, all rejected by voters. What is it looking like right now, as best we can tell, as we look out on the horizon here of 2016, in terms of the number of issues that may be before us on the 2016 ballot?
Well, you know, there are a lot out there that, you know, there was the anti-fracking, the directional drilling ballot campaign that was hoping to gather enough signatures within its 6-month window. And when that was done, they determined that they weren't there and they were going to keep trying. And the problem is the way that it works is the window is rolling until you get to the deadline in July when, you know, you've really got to decide what's going to go on the November ballot. But anything that you've gathered that is older than 6 months at that point falls off. And so at the same time that you're gathering, you know, new signatures on the tail end, you're losing signatures on the front end. And right now they're all kind of struggling. That the one that everyone is kind of watching right now is the one to add LGBT rights and gender protections to the Equal Protection Clause of the state constitution, that they've got to go out and start gathering signatures pretty soon, and we'll see if that makes it onto the ballot. That is a response to the legislature's refusal thus far to add similar protections to the state's Elliot Larson civil rights law.
And there seems to be some difference amongst liberal and progressive groups on that one about whether or not that's a good idea, right?
Right. That what's going on is it's a strategic and tactical difference, although it's gotten extremely personal where, you know, that the people who want to go ahead with this ballot drive have been calling what I'll call the state's LGBT establishment, which would be the American Civil Liberties Union, the Equality Michigan umbrella of LGBT rights groups. And they're, you know, that the word coward has been used. And that the LGBT establishment is saying that the people who are trying to go ahead with this ballot campaign are being reckless and really haven't thought it out. And what's going on here in reality is, just like I said, a difference in strategy. That Fair Michigan, the ballot campaign to amend the state constitution, thinks that it's basically foolish to wait for the Michigan legislature to do something as far as adding LGBT rights to the state's civil rights law, that's been the history, and there's no reason to believe it's going to change in the foreseeable future. And I think that this is a kind of the untold part of the story, is that the skepticism of this is driven by the national effort to pick and choose their battles, ones that they're more likely to win. And right now they see Indiana, Pennsylvania, maybe even Arizona as more likely prospects for statewide political victories that would then make it easier to adopt similar protections, you know, elsewhere, with an eye toward eventually getting a federal LGBT civil rights law passed. And so it's kind of working in that way. And so what we've got here is the state strategy, the state-based group saying, you know, Michigan shouldn't wait, while the other groups are saying, look, we're part of a national strategy. Let's stick with it.
Whatever else we may vote on when it comes to ballot issues, we know we'll be voting for president this year. Of course, the entire state house is up, the congressional delegation. Because it is a presidential election year, does that mean that it squeezes the timetable in any way at the state level for trying to pass any meaningful legislation?
I don't know if it's because it's a presidential election year, but certainly because it is an election year. And there are two reasons for that. And one is just time, that, you know, these people who are out there who are running for re-election or maybe seeking other offices need to be in their districts, knocking on doors, attending community events, and doing the things that you need to do to win in November. The other one is that the implications of any votes that you take on controversial issues are amplified because the election is clear and present. You know, before you go in for, you know, any job interview or performance review, that the things that happen right before that particular event are going to be clear and present in the minds of the people who are doing the judging. And that's no different in an election campaign year.
Rick Pluta, as always, thank you for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Gordon.
Rick Pluta is Capital Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He joined us from Lansing. Mm-hmm.